Welcome to the One Health podcast. This episode was recorded on the land of the Palawa people. I acknowledge and pay respect to all Tasmanian Aboriginal people and to their deep history of storytelling. My name's Dorian Broomhall, and I'm the Manager of Culture and Wellbeing for the Department of Health in Lutruwita, Tasmania. In this first series of the podcast, we're getting to know executives from across our organisation. For this episode, I speak with Fiona Loutier, Chief Executive of Hospitals North. In our conversation, Fiona tells us about her background with Tasmania Police and how her difference in perspective has shaped her leadership. She discusses the importance of balancing the projection of calm and vulnerability as a leader. And she suggests how we can recognise those who live our care values. We start every chat with the same question, so let's get into it. The question is, what did you want to be when you were in kindergarten?
In kindergarten? I think I wanted to be an Amazon eagle.
That's oddly specific.
Yeah, I still recall wanting to be an Amazon eagle, a big bird.
Do you think there's some sort of odd metaphor in that, or you just particularly enjoy the idea of freedom?
No, I remember that there was a dance we had to do in kindergarten, and it was a performance, and I made these eagle wings and had feathers plastered onto it, and our family and friends came and watched, and I can't remember the exact music, but it was South American Amazon-type music, and I wanted to be an eagle in real life.
That's amazing.
At four.
Yeah, of course. And I was going to say, how's that worked out?
Oh, not very well. Like, that was one ambition that went by the wayside very, very quickly.
Were you in Tasmania at this time?
I was.
Tassie girl, born and bred?
Yeah, Sandy Bay Infant School.
What other ambitions or dreams sort of came up for you?
There were a few on the way through school. A lot of my classmates went off to do nursing and teaching and medicine, and I decided I wanted to be a police officer, which was quite unusual for the particular school I was at in that particular era in time. My parents weren't that particularly comfortable with it. They wanted me to do law, and I suppose this was my way of doing law, but a different way.
Fascinating. So straight out of school, you went into policing?
Straight from school, I went to policing. And then to keep parents happy, I then enrolled in a law degree and never finished it, but got a couple of years through it and decided that I was doing it for the wrong reasons.
And so you've then stayed with policing for a very long time, right?
I have. So I've had 37 years in policing, been in pretty much most areas of policing, uniform, detectives, intelligence, rural and country policing. And yes, then I took a leap of faith during COVID and went to the Department of Communities on secondment, and then came to the Department of Health on secondment, and here I am.
Fascinating. And here you are as the Chief Executive of Tasmania's second largest hospital.
Yeah, of Hospitals North, which is actually the LGH plus eight rural hospitals.
Commissioner Donna Adams has lauded, rightly so, for the career that she's had and the way that she sort of trailblazed that pathway for females in the career, right? I imagine you must be somewhat contemporaries with Donna.
Yes, we started around about the same time. I think there's about a year or two between us. And so the challenges we had early in our career are very similar, and we tell similar stories of having to kick our court shoes off and run through them all in our stockinged feet because we weren't allowed to wear lace-up shoes. We didn't have trousers. We didn't have shirts with pockets. So we were provided handbags and, you know, you'd have to leave your handbag. This is going back close to 40 years ago. So we didn't even have pistol holders on our uniform. So our pistols would be in our handbags. And sometimes you had to leave your handbag behind while you were dealing with people. So you wouldn't dream of that happening now.
No, fascinating. Yeah. In that time, the change has just been enormous, right?
Oh, absolutely. My son's partner's a police officer, and her career at the moment is so different to when I started.
Do you think largely for the better?
Absolutely. Yes, definitely. You know, we had fun times, but there were challenges as well.
It's interesting. So I think there's so much talk in this day and age around diversity, equity, inclusion, culture, and the importance of the workplace culture that you might sort of be in. And all of that was important 30, 40 years ago as well. It's just that we didn't talk about it, right?
No, so about 30 years ago, there would have been about 900 police officers. Now there's significantly more. But the amount of women would have been, you know, 20 or 30 of the 900 were women. Whereas now it's very close to 50%. And, you know, all of a sudden, with the increasing number of women, you get much better facilities. I think the community's treated a lot differently too, because, you know, you're dealing with 50% of the community are women.
But I'm really curious, now that you've come into health, which is a female-dominated department. We are predominantly female. Mid-70% of our workforce right across the board is representative in female. And at a leadership level, I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but I believe we're pretty close to keeping that sort of half-half, which is a little unusual, even in this day and age, to have that female representation. Did you notice anything different coming in into health from that perspective?
I did, and I think it's a very positive workplace, very supportive. And I don't know if that's just the change in different working with different people in health, or whether it is partly to do with the larger number of women, but certainly a very supportive workplace, especially at the senior leadership levels.
So you spent some time with communities during COVID. What sort of made you go, yep, I'm going to jump in and lead public health for a period of time, which is just immediately post-COVID? Not everybody's idea of a fun time.
Yeah, so in the start of 2020, I was actually leading the Tasmanian Government Radio Network project for the Department of Police and Emergency Management. So a completely different role. I was asked to go across to communities and lead the hotel quarantine program. And then from there, I was asked to come to health as an incident controller to look at standing down the operation centre, the emergency operations centres. And then an opportunity came up in public health when the substantive chief executive took an opportunity in another agency. And I was approached to see if I was interested. And I thought, well, I'm on this in this position of taking opportunities at the moment. So I thought, well, yes, let's try something different and see if I can make a difference to public health, because I had actually had a fair bit to do with them during COVID, particularly at the Department of Communities and then also as incident controller. So I knew some of the challenges that were being faced by the staff working in public health, but also the department. So I thought that I could actually make a big difference there. And so that was why I was quite excited to take that opportunity.
I think it's great when people who have got different backgrounds come into those leadership roles where, you know, being an expert in the content isn't always what's important, and having that varied and more broad perspective can be quite useful. Have you found that?
I have got outstanding experts around me. So I'm so fortunate in that I've got really excellent clinical leads, nursing leads, business managers that can provide the appropriate expert advice to me. My job's to provide the leadership across the organisation to make sure that we're operating the best that we can, serving the community the best that we can, being efficient in delivering our services. Patients and their families are at the centre of everything. So my role is to make the whole system operate for everybody and relying on the experts to give me the advice on how best to approach things or the particular clinical advice that needs to be taken into consideration in making those decisions. And I think coming from the outside, the word that I've used the most since I've been here is why. Why do we do things? And sometimes you ask why so many times that nobody can actually answer why we're still doing something the way we do it. So I think that's probably been something that's been beneficial, is to unpack things and peel away the layers as to why we actually do things the way we do, and then look to see if there's better ways of doing them. And sometimes there's not, but you don't know unless you actually really look through it.
That idea of taking a curious frame to try and find out a little bit more, rather than just coming in and saying, no, we're going to do it like this right now. It sounds like that's kind of what you've done.
Yeah, and part of that's me trying to learn the business as well. So understanding the business so that I can make the right decisions. But it's also a beneficial way of people to think a bit differently too and think, well, is this the best way that we can operate?
I think that's such a great question to ask as our world does move, evolve, change the way things have worked even 5 years ago. You know, we do need to think differently about it.
Yeah, and Hospitals North is going to go through significant change over the next few years. We've had the Commission of Inquiry. The outcomes of that are going to come through. What people need at the moment, I think, is strong, visible leadership and compassion. But then we've also got efficiencies that we're going to need to build in and out in the way we operate over the next few years while making sure we deliver the best services we can. So it's a whole complexity of things that we need to do. And that's where I suppose my leadership experience comes into supporting everybody to move forward.
It's a fairly frank question, but I imagine that there'll be a few people when you came into this role that will be going, what on earth is someone who comes with the experience of a police officer turning up to run Hospitals North and the primary care that we operate for a significant part of the Tasmanian community? I can only imagine that there'd be all sorts of background conversations that might have gone on with all of that. What was it like turning up on day one?
Turning up on day one was rather daunting. You know, I'm not unfamiliar with hospitals. I've been in hospitals, working in hospitals, obviously very short term as a police officer, but very familiar with emergency departments in terms of the adrenaline and the rush and the distress of patients. So I don't have the clinical understanding. I don't, you know, I'm going to learn the administration. But the things that I do have is I have a strong willingness to learn, a desire to make things the best they can be for my staff and the community. I've worked in a number of areas of the northern region, so I know what it's like to live and work in the remote communities. I know what it's like to live and work in some of the communities that struggle. I've worked in St Helens, St Mary's, Georgetown, and in all those environments I've had involvement at arm's length, but with hospitals. My children, one went to university in Launceston, the other's a lawyer in Launceston, he moved on Sunday to Katherine in the Northern Territory. So my family's here and I want to make sure that they've got the best service and medical services that they possibly can. And I think the culture of policing, we're trained from the moment we enter the police academy in leadership, how to lead people, how to deal with stressful situations, how to remain calm when the world around you is turning to chaos. And I think they're the things that will bring benefit to Hospitals North in terms of the culture or public health, wherever I happen to be in the health department. They're the things. I'm a steady, calm person, supportive of my staff, want the best, want excellence. And I think they're the things that I transition across from police. And the other interesting part of that is people ask me why I left police, and I actually don't see that I left police. I didn't leave police because I was unhappy. I actually really enjoyed the job that I was doing. It's just I was offered another opportunity to lead in a different environment, and I took that and enjoyed it and obviously got the rungs on the board in terms of delivering results, and that's what motivates me.
Now, there's something in that I've observed in your leadership through the work that you're doing at Public Health and through some of the things that I've been exposed to watching you, you know, in action to an extent. There's something that a couple of our recently departed leaders talked a little bit about as well, and it is this this projection of calm and steady. And I think that's something that we don't talk about enough as being a trait of a leader. And it's not always easy to adopt that state of calm and steady and patience and curiosity when there's a lot going on. And we had a number of people that we've spoken to actually say, yeah, that's something that we do deliberately because it's important. Is that something that you think about? Because we do often see these leaders who we just look at them and go, wow, you must be so, so stressed, and they're projecting stress. They're clearly overwhelmed with how much they've got to do. And then that filters out around them to everybody else, right?
I think as a leader, it's really important, and it doesn't matter what level you are in an organisation, it's really important to have safe people that you can vent to. And I think that helps with maintaining calmness. So you know that it's really important that I remain calm. For me personally, I need to remain calm so I can think clearly. If I don't remain calm, then there's a risk that I won't make good decisions. So, and I think that's probably something that I've learnt over a very long period of time, partly because of some of the things that I've had to be involved with in my career. You can't let your emotions take over sometimes, but you need to have that safe space where you can. And I think that's the key to being a good leader, is having that ability to know that there's supports around, that you can tap into those supports, whether they're professional supports or just knowing you can hop on the phone to a friend or a trusted colleague and say, I've just dealt with this. That was a stressful thing for me. Do you mind if I talk to you about it? And sometimes the person that you want to talk to might not be the right person because it might be triggering for them as well. So you need to have that consideration. So I'm very lucky that and that's partly because of my background. I know that I can ring people pretty much anywhere in government and outside if I need to talk through something. So I've built my own little support network, so to speak. Having said that, I know that I could probably ring anybody in the senior executive of the Department of Health if I needed to vent or run something past them, and I would feel quite safe in doing that.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that there's a number of key learnings in that around, you know, surrounding yourself and identifying the people, no matter where they might be, that are the people that you can run things by, or as you say, occasionally vent. We all need to do it. It's just a part of life, right? But finding the safe and appropriate people to be able to have that conversation with, I think that's it's a really, really good way of looking at it. I think
you've got to be constructive too when you do that sort of thing. Like you need to balance what you're thinking is and not be overly critical of yourself or of others either in doing it. You can be frustrated, but sometimes being frustrated, you just need to keep that to yourself.
As you've come into the Hospitals North environment, you've come in at a time where some really great work has really been kicked off by the former Chief Executive, Jen Duncan, who was here for sadly not as long as many of us would have liked. And having said that, I think she's absolutely left her mark in the work that she's begun.
Absolutely.
And some of the work that we're looking at for the entire organisation sort of running in parallel with some of that work, I think. And I think it's important that we start to try and find ways that we can operate as a single entity as best we possibly can, noting that no matter where you are in Tasmania, you should expect the same level of care. And I think that's really important to note. And that word care is one that we really want to put at the forefront of all of the work that we do as we start to think about these values of compassion, accountability, respect and excellence. Now you've come into an environment where those values have been adopted for around 6 months or so, maybe a little bit longer. What have you noticed since you've come in around those values, the four care values, if you like?
The four care values, they resonate. They resonate with the community and they resonate with the staff. We've still got challenges ahead of us. Not everybody's adhering to the values. So we need to make sure that people are accountable to those values, but also that they live them and breathe them and they value the values and the purpose that they're there for. You know, we want everybody to strive for excellence. And it doesn't matter whether you're a cleaner or you're a neurosurgeon. You have excellence in the role that you do, and that's what we want from our people. We want people to have compassion, no matter who they're dealing with, whether it's with a member of the public that's a patient, a family member, just as importantly, each other. So that's one of the things that I think we've still got a bit of work to do within Hospitals North is our respect and compassion for each other and holding people accountable, but more importantly, actually holding ourselves accountable. I can hold people accountable. I need to hold myself accountable and I need to recognise when I aren't living up to the values. But likewise, I need to hold everybody else accountable for living up to the values that we have in place. So those values were work that Jen did through the Studer-Heron Group, and we're continuing working with the Studer-Heron Group, even though Jen has departed. But her legacy lives on through that and obviously is being taken throughout the rest of the organisation, which is really fantastic.
We've talked about the calling out of things when perhaps they're not so good. Equally, or if not more important, I think, is recognising when things are great and people are living and breathing their values, as you say. Well, what's our approach there? What are we doing to call that out?
Well, for a start, here in Hospitals North, our executive here have thank you cards. So we send them, they're designed to go out to community members, but we also send them to our staff. We've got our newsletter where we call out, you know, excellent behaviour or excellent, I suppose, recognition. We've also, in our monthly accountability meetings, we identify three people from each area that needs to be acknowledged and recognised for their good work, and that's either done by myself or their direct managers or their clinical or nursing directors. But if you do great work, Dorian, I should be, shouldn't matter whether it's me or, you know, anyone can say, that was great what you just did, Dorian. I really appreciated it. And it doesn't matter whether it's somebody senior to you or junior to you. I think that is really important that we all do it for each other.
There's something in that that's really important. And I think that we forget that in this discourse of leadership and the leader needs to be doing this and the leader needs to be doing that. When's the last time you said thank you to your boss? Or when's the last time that you paid your manager a compliment and said, gee, that was great that you did that, or I got this great feedback about you? That just...
No.
Or when for you as the leader of the organisation, when's the last time perhaps someone's given you that feedback? Doesn't seem to happen as often, does it?
It's a good reflection, isn't it? And I work for really good people and they deserve that recognition from me and others at my level.
Yeah, I think something that I've noticed and tried to do differently, because certainly I've got a very good relationship with my direct manager and I like to, where I can, acknowledge and say thank you and pay that forward. I do notice that response is sometimes a little bit surprised.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember quite a few years ago now, that somebody said to me, the further up you get up, the less acknowledgement or, you know, recognition you get when you do good work. It's just expected that you do it. But, you know, we do have that responsibility and it's probably a good reminder for me to say thank you to some of the people that support me from above.
Something that often we have observed is missing from our senior leaders is that ability to role model vulnerability, or the ability to, you know, as you've just sort of described, put your hand up when you're actually, you know, something isn't going very well, because we've got this, we need to be, as we talked about, calm and collected and all of those things and very professional. And yes, that's important. And sometimes just having that vulnerability there, I think is often the way in for people to go, oh, you're actually a real person. You know, you've got kids, as you've talked about. Guess what? You've got all of the home things that you need to think about. You've got to go to the shops, got to make dinner. Normal person, right?
Yeah. I mean, my kids are a bit older now, but yep, I've worked while my kids were growing up and, you know, put them through school like most people do with their families. But I think it's important for leaders to have that edge of vulnerability and to be open and transparent, because it allows everybody else to do the same and realise that they don't have to be stoic or, you know, all the time. You know, we all need to get advice from other people. We all need to put our hand up if there's something we can't do. Or we can do it, we just need a little bit of extra support or help or advice to work our way through something.
I think it's such a starting point of having an organisation where people are safe, you know, whether you want to call it psychologically safe or not. But having a leader that puts their hand up and owns their mistakes is the self-accountability that you're talking about. Hey, yeah, I got that wrong.
Yeah.
It's a really challenging thing for, you know, my perspective, looking at culture holistically of the organisation. I know we need more of that. How do I nudge that to happen?
It's about teamwork. So everybody will make a mistake. There's no, you know, it's human nature. Nobody is perfect, although some people might like to think they are, that nobody is perfect. And if you ensure that you've got a good team around you, no matter what your position is or where you are, if you're a senior leader or a junior leader or not even in a leadership position, you need to make sure you've got a good team around you that holds similar values and you get their advice. And if you make a mistake, it's a mistake together. But your chances of making a mistake are a lot more reduced if you actually have that team beside you and taking that advice and listening before making a decision. The risk of getting it wrong is reduced significantly. Having said that, sometimes you have to make decisions quickly. You have to take a stand that is against the advice and against everything. But if you've listened, you understand and know the risks that you're taking when you make that decision.
So just to finish up then, you said earlier that you expect that there's going to be a fair amount of change for hospitals and all, as well as the Department of Health, I would say more broadly over the next few years. And that's probably not only okay, it's probably important. Where do you think we're going? What's the journey? What's the direction? What's the heading?
If you look at the long-term health plan, it's through to 2040. That's our direction. You know, there's so much positivity. We're going to go into a period where there's going to be obviously financial efficiencies that are going to need to be made. That's other departments feeling that at the moment, and obviously health will be impacted as well. So we have to work through that. But I think the opportunity to come together and work on a statewide basis is profound. and it's there. You know, for Launceston, we've got the infrastructure changes that are going to take place, coupled with the changes to integrated working with other areas of the state. That's our direction.
A heap to come, I think.
Yeah, we've got to reduce our length of stay for patients in the hospital. We've got to fix our access and flow. We've got all those things that need to be fixed. But I think the long-term strategic goals set us on a really fantastic path forward.
Yeah, great. Fiona, thanks for chatting. Thanks for the time. And thanks.
Lovely to chat to you anytime, Dorian.
Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. I hope you found something in our conversation that you can take away and apply into your own work. For more information about the Care Recognition Program, visit the One Health Culture page on the department intranet. You can read the Health Workforce 2040 strategy, which Fiona mentioned, on the intranet as well. Join me again in our next episode when I speak with Craig Jeffrey, our Chief Financial Officer.